भगवते वासुदेवाय। Today we'll be reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, entitled Dhyan Yoga, and we'll be covering verses number 1 to 4. We'll start with verse number 1, text 1. Anashrita karma phalam कार्यं कर्म करोति यः स सन्यासी च योगी च न निरग्निर्न चाक्रियः। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "One who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty." Purport: In this chapter, the Lord explains that the process of the Eightfold Yoga system is a means to control the mind and the senses. However, this is very difficult for people in general to perform, especially in the age of Kali. Although the Eightfold Yoga system is recommended in this chapter, the Lord emphasizes that the process of Karma Yoga, or acting in Krishna consciousness, is better. Everyone acts in this world to maintain his family and their paraphernalia, but no one is working without some self-interest, some personal gratification, be it concentrated or extended. The criterion of perfection is to act in Krishna consciousness and not with a view to enjoying the fruits of work. To act in Krishna consciousness is the duty of every living entity, because all are constitutionally parts and parcels of the Supreme. The parts of the body work for the satisfaction of the whole body. The limbs of the body do not act for self-satisfaction, but for the satisfaction of the complete whole. Similarly, the living entity who acts for satisfaction of the Supreme Whole and not for personal satisfaction is the perfect sannyasi, the perfect yogi. The sannyasis sometimes artificially think that they have become liberated from all material duties, and therefore they cease to perform Agnihotra Yajnas, fire sacrifices. But actually, they are self-interested, because their goal is to become one with the impersonal Brahman. Such a desire is greater than any material desire, but it is not without self-interest. Similarly, the mystic yogi who practices the yoga system with half-open eyes, ceasing all material activities, desires some satisfaction for his personal self. But a person acting in Krishna consciousness works for the satisfaction of the whole without self-interest. A Krishna conscious person has no desire for self-satisfaction. His criterion of success is the satisfaction of Krishna, and thus he is the perfect sannyasi or perfect yogi. Lord Chaitanya, the highest perfectional symbol of renunciation, prays in this way: Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadish kamaye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatat bhaktir ahaituki tvai. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. What I want Only is the causeless mercy of your devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhayam Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is the chapter entitled Dhyana Yoga. In this first verse, today we'll be dealing with four verses, but in this first verse, the topic that is covered is what is true sannyas or renunciation. And of course, a brief description of what is Dhyana Yoga is given in this entire chapter. But overall, the emphasis is on Krishna consciousness, or in other words, Bhakti Yoga. Though the process of Dhyana Yoga has been described in detail in this entire chapter, but yet the conclusion that is being derived is, though Dhyana Yoga is one of the recommended processes, Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga is the best, the easiest, and the most preferred of the processes available, especially in the age of Kali. So we get a proper understanding of the various processes of yoga in these chapters that we are now dealing with, the earlier chapter and the other chapter taken together. But Dhyana Yoga is also known as Ashtanga Yoga. It is a means to control the mind and the senses. Especially difficult in the age of Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga is an age of hypocrisy and quarrel. The Ashtanga Yoga method is actually a mechanical method to control the mind and the senses. Because we know the mind is like a monkey, very restless, like a small child. If you ask a small child to sit in one place, will the child sit? Will the child very obediently follow your instructions? Do you think it's going to happen? Not at all. The child is restless, will be jumping, will be running, and you have to be after the child. The mind is much more than that. So how to control it? Supposing you have a glass of water and you stir the liquid within it, then what happens? The liquid is moving. And if you want to agitate it further, you just shake the whole glass. But then, if you want to whole thing to settle down, what is the best method? Just keep it on and let it be for some time. After some time, all the agitation stops and the whole thing comes to a standstill. Right? Simple example. Similarly, this mind is within the body. So Ashtanga Yoga method practices this method. By controlling the body, you control the mind. You know, we have a saying in English which says mind over matter. Mind is very powerful. It can influence the body, it can influence matter. Similarly, the reverse is also true. If you control the body, to a certain extent you can control the mind. What is the proof for this? Very simple proof. Deep breathing, simple method. When somebody is agitated, the best method to calm down the mind is to sit down, take some deep breath. This is the process of pranayama. This is what is taught in Yoga Vyas, right? So when you do this, what happens? Automatically, the agitated mind gradually comes to calmness. So Ashtanga Yoga method is following the mechanical process. Actually, the whole process of yoga, Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, then Dhyana Yoga, then Bhakti Yoga, if you try to understand what is the meaning of the word yoga, yoga means to connect to the Supreme. And to better understand how this process works, one has to first understand oneself. Just as if there is a problem in the car and you want to rectify it, it is necessary to have a knowledge of the working of the car. What are the different parts? What are the different mechanisms? How they function, etc. In the same way, we have to get introduced to ourselves. What is it that is there within this thing called the self? So, in the Kathopanishad and even in the other various Puranic literature, time and again, this very famous simile or analogy is given of a chariot. The body is compared to a chariot. The senses are compared to the horses. The reins are compared to the mind, the lagam that they say, which controls the horses. The chariot driver is compared to the intelligence, and the passenger on the chariot is compared to the soul. Similarly, if you try to understand the various features that exist within ourselves, we have something known as the mind and something else known as the intelligence. Then we have what is known as the senses. So how these are interrelated to each other is very nicely explained by the example of the chariot. From that you can see how the whole hierarchy is arranged. And this is further elaborated in one beautiful shloka of the Bhagavad Gita, which says, Indriyani parani yahur indrebhya param mana manasastu param buddhir yo buddhir paratastu saham. So it explains that the objects, they attract the senses. But the senses are stronger than the sense objects. But stronger than the senses is the mind. Stronger than the mind is the intelligence. And topmost of all is the soul. So this is how the hierarchy flows. So if you have to control the senses, you have to go to the higher authority. What is the higher authority? The mind. And how can the mind be controlled? By going to the higher authority. Higher authority is the intelligence. But how to direct the mind, intelligence and the senses in a proper soul, in a proper way, in the right direction? By purifying the soul. If the soul is purified, the intelligence is pure, then the mind becomes clear and the senses remain in control. And the sense objects no longer disturb a person. Then a person has come to a stage when he is in control of his senses and the sense objects will not aggravate him in any way, will not trouble him. See, asanas involve physical postures which occupy the mind and the body. Because when performing asanas, what happens is we have to exercise the body in different ways, and also breathing techniques are involved in all the asanas, which again pacifies the mind. So the body and the mind both are involved in the performance of these asanas, and therefore ultimately that tries to get the senses under control. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath, Shri Gopal, Shri Shri Gaur Nidai Ki Jai. So by engaging in physical postures and engaging the mind, the senses are tried to control, to be controlled. But this is a laborious method. It is just like climbing the building by using the staircase. What is the alternative? If you don't use the staircase, then you have the elevator, the lift. Definitely going through the elevator or the lift is the easier process. But what is the use of the elevator known as the easier or the more sublime process? That is the process of Krishna consciousness. In Krishna consciousness, what happens is the mind is always engaged in Krishna, either in chanting the holy name or hearing the pastimes of the Lord or engaged in the service of the Lord by various devotional practices. So the mind, the body and all the aspects of the individual are constantly engaged in remembering and serving the Lord. So this way the mind automatically is under control. It is the mind, when it becomes strong, then what is the result of this? It does not get drifted away. Supposing there is a boat in the river and it is not tied, then what will happen? It will flow with the current. After some time, if you come back and see, where is my boat? Boat is not there anymore. It has gone downstream somewhere. You have to go searching after the boat then. Exactly the same thing happens in our lives also. If the mind is uncontrolled, then what happens? It doesn't serve the purpose. It doesn't serve the purpose. But how to peg it in one place? How to control it? How to tie it down? That is how it is engaged in the remembering and serving the Lord. In that way, it does not drift from its position. Therefore, Krishna conscious brings mind and the senses under control. Because as we have already seen, the mind is the controller of the senses. So if the mind itself is controlled, it becomes much easier to control the senses with the help of that mind. Artificially giving up one's duties is not sannyas. That is what is to be understood. Sannyas means renunciation. Here, anashrita karma phalam karyam karma karotiyah sa sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chakriyah. So, one who is unattached to the fruits of his work and who works as he is obligated is in the renounced order of life. And he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no duty. Especially in the Mayavad Sampradaya or this Mayavad following, the sannyasis actually want to merge with the whole, want to merge with the Supreme. That is their line of approach. The impersonal Brahman, as it is explained as. But Prabhupada explains that this is actually a selfish desire. That is, I want to do something. So that becomes selfish. I want to merge in the whole. That is the mentality. That is the approach. I don't want to be myself. I want to give up my individuality. I want to become that. That is what is the whole approach. And similarly, in the mystic yogic process, which is known as the Dhyana Yoga or the Ashtanga Yoga, it is one tries to attain various mystic siddhis. They try to do various kind of activities and attain various mystic siddhis. They want to gain yogic powers. So again, one is endeavoring an attempt to do something. It is again an act of selfishness. I want. I am endeavoring for something. That is the process. But what is the process of Krishna consciousness? It is not I want. It is what the Lord wants. I only want to serve, that's all. I'll serve the Lord according to what He wants. That is how the whole direction changes. That is how the whole process is reversed in that. It is not what I want. It is not selfish. It is selfless. That is the distinguishing feature of Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga, in other words, which is therefore by far superior to the other processes that have been explained. That is devotional service. That is perfection of sannyas. That is what it is explained. Not one who lights no fire or performs no activities. Because sometimes people misled or misdirected. They think that now renunciation means to give up all activity, to retire from service, to give up one's responsibility, to just go and blankly meditate, which is not the true process of sannyas. Sometimes people have this misconception. Sannyas means giving up activity, retiring from duties and responsibilities. That is actually escapism. That is not sannyas. So here it is explained very clearly. Sannyas means it is controlling the senses and renouncing sense pleasure. That is what is to be renounced. It is not renouncing responsibilities and duties. That is to be understood. That is the true interpretation of sannyas. It is in fact taking more responsibility. One's responsibility towards God. Generally in this life, what are the responsibilities people take? They take responsibility for oneself, for maintaining the body. They take responsibility for the extended self, maintaining the family. They take responsibility for the society, social responsibility, national responsibility, international responsibility. The circle goes on widening. The It goes on extending further and further, but still the connection is the body. Starting from the body, like you throw a stone in the pond, there is a stone in the center. From the center, the ripple begins to spread outside. The ripples go on and they spread throughout the whole pond. But what is the center? The point where the stone has been thrown. Similarly, when people have this bodily concept, everything starts on the body and gradually it starts extending outward and outward and outward, further and further. But then the center is still the body. So therefore, that is still a selfish center. That is what is very nicely explained over here. But in Krishna consciousness or Bhakti Yoga, the center is not my body. The center is Krishna. Therefore, there is a very nice shloka in the Chaitanya Charitamrita which explains this, which says, Atmendriya priti icha tare boli kam, Krishnendriya priti vacha dhare premanam. The meaning of this is, if you want to satisfy your senses and give pleasure to your own senses, then what you are doing is simply lust. Tare boli kam. Krishnendriya priti vancha. But if your desire is to satisfy the senses of Krishna, dhare premanam, then that act is love. That act is not lust. This is how these two things are very clearly distinguished. Love and lust, selfishness and selflessness, working for oneself and working for the Lord. One has to understand that actually in this purport it has been nicely explained that we are parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole. Krishna is supreme. Supreme means topmost, complete, purna. And we are ansha. Mamaivamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. It's explained. So we are fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Whole. Now when you speak of the part and the whole, immediately the relationship is very clearly established. The function of the part is to serve the whole. Even if you take the example of the fan, which is now revolving overhead, it has got so many components. If the components are not in their proper position, then they cannot serve the purpose for which they are meant. It's got to serve the whole unit as such. And supposing one screw falls down from that fan, so long as it's attached to the fan, it has great significance. It has value. But if it falls down from that fan, what happens? Somebody will come and just sweep it off. It loses its value. It loses its significance. Similarly, we are parts and parcels. And Krishna is the Supreme Whole. So our relationship with Krishna as a part, function as a part, is to serve the whole. So until and unless we are discharging that function of serving the whole, we become valueless. We lose our value. That is nirarthak, it is called as. Sarthak and nirarthak. Sarthak means fulfilling. Nirarthak means wasted. So that's our position if we are not serving the whole, not serving Krishna. So the beautiful example given in this regard is of that of the finger and the body. The finger is a part of this body. And the duty of the finger is to take the food and put it in the mouth. Now, if the finger starts imagining, let me consume this food directly. I am not going to feed it in the mouth. I will absorb this food directly. So the finger is dipping itself into a pot of ghee. And it says, now I will absorb the food directly. What will happen? Do you think it will get any nutrition? Nothing. It will not get any nutrition. And what happens? The entire body also is deprived of any food. But when this finger takes that food and puts it in the body, puts it in the mouth, then what happens? It immediately goes to the stomach, it gets digested, and through the circulatory system, the nutrition is circulated to the entire body, including the finger. So the finger is nourished. So Radha Gopinath Prabhu explains this in a very nice way. He says, we have 10 fingers. So this finger, which is taking the food and putting it in the body, so when the food goes into the body, then this finger is nourished. And his immediate brothers, his immediate family, this entire palm, is nourished. And his cousins, the other palm, they are nourished. And his distant relatives, the toes, they are nourished. And the whole body, the society, is nourished. So this is how the whole system works. So this is the part and the whole. The function of the part is to serve the whole. So in this way we can understand that we as living entities are parts and parcel of Krishna. So if we want to really be satisfied, if we want to be really nourished, if we want to be really fulfilled, having experienced fulfillment in life, then the simple logic is we simply serve the Supreme Lord. Lovingly serve the Supreme Lord. And then this logic takes over. When the part serves the whole, everybody is nourished. Complete. There is nourishment all around, there is satisfaction, and there is fulfillment all around. So this is the core philosophy that we have to understand. We have to serve Krishna. We have to act for his pleasure. And that is what is explained in this verse. This is the meaning of real renunciation. Real renunciation is not trying to serve oneself, but real renunciation is to serve the Supreme Self. It is not stopping of service. Service is there, but the direction is changing. It is not towards the self, but the Supreme Self. Then that is real renunciation. So this is the clarification that is given in this first verse. So therefore, when you act in Krishna consciousness, that action is positive. And positive action is real renunciation. So renunciation is not inaction. It is positive action. Utilizing everything in Krishna's service and not for one's own sense gratification is real renunciation, and that is exactly what is known as sannyas. So after reading this first verse, now we understand what is true sannyas. So that's what is explained here. Sa sannyasi cha yogi cha. Such a person is a true sannyasi, such a person is a true yogi. Na nir agnir na chakriyaha. Not one who lights no fire or performs no activity. Now when we go to the second verse, sa sannyasam iti prayur yogam tam vidhi pandava. Na hiya sannyasasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kashchanah. The translation is as follows. What is called renunciation, you should know, to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. Of course, the purport here is also quite long. I would not like to go into that because then we will have less time to complete the next two verses. But to sum up or to understand what is explained in the second verse, therefore, such renunciation means what is true renunciation has been explained in the first verse, that is to work for the satisfaction of the Supreme Self. And when one works in that way, then one is truly renounced. And this kind of renunciation is what is called as yoga. So when we say yoga, yoga means to connect. But how to connect? To connect in service. To connect to serve the Supreme Whole. That is the meaning of yoga. That is linking to God. And sense gratification and yoga do not go together. So what is yoga is explained in this second verse. It explains the meaning of yoga. It cannot be the same as sense gratification. When one is engaged in sense gratification, trying to please one's own senses, he is not involved in the yogic process. That means he is not linking to God. That is exactly, one is like lighting a fire and the other is like pouring water on the fire. If you are pouring water on the fire, how will the fire burn? It cannot burn. But if you light and fan the fire, then it will burn. So therefore, the process of renunciation is serving the Supreme Whole, as we understood from the first verse, and at the same time, abstaining from sense gratification. Then the process is complete. Otherwise, you are lighting the fire, But then you're also pouring water on it when you engage in sense gratification. So how will the fire burn then? It is just like going to a doctor and telling, I want medicine. Doctor says, okay, here is your medicine, take it. But if you have got cold, he says, also eat plenty of ice cream, right? Does he say that? He says, do not eat ice cream. Because that is going to act in the reverse direction. It is not going to help the medicine to cure your cold. So therefore, one do and one don't. They always go together. Both are acting in the same direction. It is not that one is a don't, therefore it is acting in the opposite direction. Have the medicine, but refrain from unfavorable food. Then your cure is faster and assured. In the same way, here it is explained, the process of yoga is to serve the Supreme Whole. At the same time, one has to also abstain from sense gratification. Then the yogic process is complete. Then it is realized. And here it is explained that a Krishna conscious person is always engaged in enjoyment for the Supreme. See, that is the beauty of a Krishna conscious person. It is not that when you are trying to serve the Supreme, you lack in enjoyment. Sometimes people have this wrong notion. If you cannot please yourself, then what is the purpose of life? What are you going to achieve in life? What are you going to do in your life? It is very clearly explained. Actually, when you serve the Supreme Whole, there is enjoyment in that. And that enjoyment is superior to the enjoyment what you experience in trying to serve yourself, your own senses. So there is two directions in which one, service is unavoidable. Either serve the Supreme Whole or serve the Self. So if you serve the Supreme Whole, there is pleasure in it and that pleasure is greater. If he does not do it, if he is not serving the Supreme Whole, then what is the alternative? He must serve himself. There is no other choice. It is either on or either off. There is nothing in between. There is no choice. So until and unless one sees to it that one is steadily engaged in devotional practice, what happens? One automatically drifts into sense gratification. It is not that one willingly goes. We gave the example of the boat. If the boat is not tied to the shore, what happens? It drifts downstream. Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj gave a very good example. He says, if you are not engaged in Krishna consciousness, then what happens? He says, he used this term which I liked it very much. He says, you evaporate into Maya. Maya is the opposite of Krishna consciousness, illusion. And if you do not do this, like if you take some droplets of water and sprinkle it on the floor, after some time you come and see what happens. Those droplets, are they still there? They have simply evaporated. What did you do? You did nothing. You have not taken any positive action for doing that. But it simply evaporates. This is what happens in our experience in human life also. Until and unless one is positively engaged, the negative takes over. You don't have to make an attempt to go into the negative. It takes over. So you have to be very positive. Until unless you are that, you are automatically gone. That is it. And the third verse which we have is Aru Rokshor Muner Yogam Karma Karanam Uchyate Yoga Rodhasya Tasyaiva Shama Karanam Uchyate. Translation is, for one who is a neophyte in the eightfold yoga system, work is said to be the means, and for one who is already elevated in yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. In this third verse, the stages of yoga are explained. A neophyte has to work. That is, neophyte means one, he's just entered the yogic process. He has to work to advance in yoga. It isn't that if you take to the process of bhakti yoga or any yogic system, you immediately quit your work. No, you have to do your work. That stage is known as Yoga Ruruksha, the initial stage. As one advances and becomes advanced, the yogi ceases all material activities. Material activities are those which is in connection with the body and the self, which is directed towards sense gratification. They become material activities. And devotional service is that which is directed towards pleasing Krishna, serving Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna. So an advanced yogi ceases all material activities. That is the advanced stage. And that stage is known as the Yoga Ruda stage. But a Krishna conscious person, however, so this various processes is available, especially the Ashtanga Yoga process. What is the meaning of the Ashtanga Yoga process? Actually, it is known as the Ashta means eight, Anga means parts. So Ashtanga means the eightfold process. And it comprises of these eight constituents. They are Yama, which means prohibitions, means don'ts, what you are not supposed to do. Niyama means regulations, the do's, what you are supposed to do. Asana, postures, various asanas. Then fourth is pranayam or the breathing process. Fifth is pratyahar or withdrawing the senses from the sense objects. The sixth is dharana, which is light meditation. Seventh is dhyana, which is deep meditation. And the eighth is samadhi, which is complete absorption to the point of losing external consciousness. So this is the process of the Ashtanga Yoga. So when one completes this Ashtanga Yoga process, then one comes to the advanced stage or the Yoga Ruda stage. And at that stage, what happens is, ceases all material activities. It's also explained, the yogic process is compared to a ladder. And there are three aspects, three kinds of yogas available: Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and the Bhakti Yoga. Starting from Jnana Yoga, that is, Jnana means knowledge. So until one knows, one cannot do anything. Then second is Dhyana. Dhyana means where you apply the knowledge that you have learned. And Bhakti, it culminates in faith and loving service to the Supreme Lord, which is actually nothing but simply the mercy of the Supreme Lord. Ultimately, any yogic process to be successful has to culminate in Bhakti Yoga. Until and unless it culminates in Bhakti Yoga, it is not complete. But how does this process work of coming to the process of loving God? There is one beautiful shloka in the Srimad Bhagavatam which explains this, which says, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitah Janayatyashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Tat Ahaitukam. So it explains that what is the use of engaging in loving devotional service to the Supreme Lord, because Bhakti Yoga means devotional service. So Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga, which is known as Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Prayojita means use. What is the use of engaging in the loving devotional service of the Supreme Lord? The minute you do that, as soon as you start the process, two things simultaneously happen. It is like switching on the light. Darkness automatically goes. You don't have to make an external effect to remove the darkness. Simultaneous. Similarly, the minute you engage in loving devotional service of the Supreme Lord, what happens is, Janayatya Ashu Vairagyam. Janayatya means takes birth. Ashu means immediately. Vairagyam means renunciation, withdrawal from the senses, sense objects. That immediately takes place. And Jnanam Chatat Ahaitukam, and knowledge also dawns upon the person from inside. From the heart, the knowledge is revealed. Ahaitukam means without effort. Without any effort. You don't have to external, you don't have to strive for it separately. Oh, now I am starting the process of yoga. So now what I will do is, I will take these books, I will sit, I will read, I will assimilate this knowledge, I will try to understand this. No, no, no. All these things are not required. immediately you engage in devotional service and the whole process starts. It's automatic. That's the beauty of it. And the Lord also says, Tesham satata yuktanam bhajate priti bhajatam priti purvakam te dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. That is chapter 10, verse number 10. It is actually the definition of this buddhi yoga, that is Krishna consciousness. So he says that one who strives to serve me, this is the beauty. When you strive to serve the Lord with your limited abilities, in whatever condition you are, it is not that you have to be a very advanced soul. It is not that you have to be a great devotee. Ordinary, simple, mundane, humdrum, routine, in whatever condition one may be. But if one takes a step in that direction, then what does the Lord do? He doesn't keep quiet. He reciprocates. Dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayantite. He says, I supply the faith by which one can then come to me. That is his reciprocation. That is why this system works. It is not that we try to do something and we go all the way uphill. No. We try to do a little and the rest is done by him. That is how it becomes effortless. When you say, ahaitukam, ahaitukam means effortless. Why? Because the effort is there, but on the part of the Lord. Not on our part. What is our ability to put effort? We should think of that. What is our capacity to even put effort? Infinitesimal. We are infinitesimal. So what effort can we put? So we have to depend on the effort of the Lord. Another word for the effort of the Lord is mercy. And actually this cycle goes like this. One begins to serve with or without faith. Even if one doesn't have faith, one simply has to serve the Lord. One has to make the move in the right direction. Then what happens? What is the result of that? Our endeavor. One begins to serve is our endeavor. It leads to the Lord's reciprocation. That is mercy on the part of the Lord. And when that mercy the Lord gives, he gives it in the form of faith. His bestowing mercy is, he invests our heart with the faith that is required. And when one begins to serve with faith, then what happens? It actually gives rise to love of God. That is actually the culmination of the process of yoga. To ultimately achieve love of God. That is actually the goal. And when you engage in loving devotional service, first you start serving even without faith. Love is far away. There is no faith also. But then the Lord's mercy, he gives you the faith. Then with that faith, you again continue to serve. The Lord's mercy, he gifts you with pure love of God. And with that love, when you again continue to serve, then that results in bliss. Bliss means unadulterated happiness. And one who has tasted bliss will not relish the pleasures of this world. If you get the higher taste, the lower taste falls away. So one who has tasted bliss will not relish the pleasures of this world. What is the practical example of this? One who relishes kirtans will not be allured to film songs. One who has got the taste of kirtan, he is not attracted to the film songs anymore. And one who dances in the kirtans will not be attracted by the discotheques. And one who has experienced Krishna's loving reciprocation will not be tormented by lust. This is the power of the Krishna conscious process. And now, in the last verse, verse number 4, Yada hi nendri artheshu na karmasva anushajet sarva sankalpa sanyasi yoga rudas tadochate. The translation is, a person is said to be elevated in yoga when, having renounced all material desires, he neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. So in the third verse, the different stages of yoga are described. And in the fourth verse, the perfection of the yogic process or the advanced stage, the yoga rudra stage, is described. What is the characteristic of a person who has attained the yoga rudra stage or the perfection of the yogic process? He neither acts for sense gratification nor engages in fruitive activities. Fruitive activities means to do something to gain something in return. That is fruitive activity. Actually, that is known as work. Work means to perform an activity for something in return. That is work. Once there was a conversation and somebody asked the devotees, so you don't do any work. So the devotee said, why, of course we work. Prabhupada said, no, devotees do not work. He intervened in between and he told the reporter, no, devotees do not work. So the devotee was a little surprised. Then Prabhupada added, devotees only serve. They don't work. Because this is the difference between work and service. Work means to do for some gain. And service means no selfish motivation. Not doing anything for gaining anything. It's only for giving. That is the difference. So Krishna conscious process is serving the Lord. And the other processes, they are tinged with the desire for gain. The Mayavadis want to merge with the Supreme Lord. So they want to have something. The mystic yogis, they want to gain some mystic siddhis. The jnanis want to attain some knowledge and other things. But the Krishna conscious or the bhakti yoga process is simply lovingly serving the Lord. That's all. But the beauty is, when you serve somebody else, generally the understanding is, what do I gain in that? But that is the whole process. That is the whole secret. The secret lies is when you serve the whole, you are fully satisfied. Like the finger is nourished when it puts food in the mouth. In the same way, when you serve the Supreme Lord, that will give supreme fulfillment and supreme satisfaction. That is how the whole process works. So the fourth stage is that stage of advanced yogic process. Now, one simple example, and we will stop with that. All these things we discussed, there's so much of theory. But if you take one example, then you can actually see how it really applies. We have on one hand Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu did fantastic Ashtanga Yoga process. He held his breath. He was standing on one toe for years together. So much so that an ant hill formed over his entire body. Not only that, the ants ate his body also. Even his body was eaten by the ants. It was hardly recognizable. Could not even recognize the human form. It was completely covered with anthill. It was in that condition that he was standing. But his determination, this yogic process he was doing, that is a mystic power he wanted. He wanted to actually become deathless. Okay. But on the other hand, you compare his yogic prowess with what Prahlad got. Prahlad is his own son, but he was a Krishna conscious devotee, a perfect example of Krishna consciousness. And according to the definition of these verses, he is a yogi and a sannyasi simultaneously. So he is more than a yogi, a perfect sannyasi. Hiranyakashipu, despite all his yogic achievements, was still tormented by greed. He was completely disturbed when Prahlad Maharaj would not surrender to his wishes. But Prahlad Maharaj, on the other hand, even though he was threatened with death and his very life was going to be annihilated, under the most disturbing conditions, thrown from a cliff, thrown into fire, put in a pit of serpents, being tried to be smashed under the feet of an elephant, thrown into the sea, in spite of all these conditions, he was completely undisturbed. This is the power of a devotee. Because the devotee has complete faith in the Lord. And this is the position of Hiranyakashipu. And in contrast, what is Prahlad Maharaj? He is a shining example of Bhakti Yoga. Hare Krishna. So I think we stop here in these four verses.